We want to thank you for listening today. This audio sermon is a ministry of Faith Baptist Church, a place where you belong. Now let's listen to the message of truth from God's Word.
Let's turn to the Gospel of John, if you would, tonight. I told Pastor Todd that this really worked out well for me. We started a campus, a second campus, and we're getting ready to start a third campus at our place. And it's been a little bit, it's been a great joy. We had 460 on our second campus last weekend. We had hurricanes this weekend and had about 300 people there. So it can tell you how fickle the weather can be for you. But we had 460 last weekend and baptized people. And in fact, have baptized, I think, 40 on that campus in the last 12 months. And so it's been an effective thing, but it's challenging because we're trying to lead one church in multiple locations. And we have what I'd call a speedboat, that's a campus, and we have a cruise ship, that's the original campus. We never call it main campus because they're all main. Whatever campus you go to is the main campus, right? So one's a cruise ship, one's a speedboat. It's easy to turn a speedboat. It's really hard to turn a cruise ship, and you can't turn it quickly. And so we're trying to do missions in a way that you can do it across both campuses in a harmonious way. And so I'm having to rethink the way we communicate missions. And tonight, I'm going to practice on you. I really want to talk to I've really entitled the sermon, Ascent Life. I want you to think with me for a moment about Jesus in the last days of his life. In fact, we believe, and commentators would tell you, that most likely John 12 through John 20 would literally cover a 7 to 8 day period in the life of Jesus. It's remarkable that much of a historical record, a gospel book, would just span just 7 days, 7 literal days of time. It's amazing how much is packed into that. If you overlay the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, over the Gospel of John, you find that Jesus spent a great deal of his time very intensely focused on two things. One, how he was ministering to and commissioning, preparing his disciples to go on mission. And two, how much time he spent praying and worshiping and connecting with the Father. If you were to sum up the focus of Jesus' last days, he was praying and he was training his disciples, getting ready to send them on mission. There's two periods of time of prayer that Jesus spends. And you find them in John 17 and John 18. We're not going to read all of John 17 tonight. John 17 is what is commonly referred to as the Lord's intercessory prayer. It is, though with all due respect to Orthodox and Protestant orthodoxy, it is not, the Lord's Prayer is not Matthew 6, Our Father which art in heaven. That's a model prayer. It's not the Lord's Prayer. The Lord's Prayer is John 17. And it is his intercessory prayer when he goes to the Father at the end of his life and he pours his heart out. He gives a glimpse behind the curtain into the very heart of God, into the very heart of his purpose and reason for coming. John 18 records him going over the brook Kidron into the Garden of Gethsemane, where he prayed the prayer that we know from the other Gospels, Lord, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. And that is his prayer of surrender, his prayer of submission to the upcoming atonement that he was going to make with his life. In the middle of John 17, I'm not going to read it all, but I'm going to begin in verse 13. Jesus is praying. And what's so interesting about this is that now he turns his prayer really for us. It's towards us and our mission here on this earth. And he says, now I come to thee, verse 13, and these things I speak in the world, that they might have my joy fulfilled in themselves. You know, let me just restate that for you a little bit. that my people would experience the fullness of joy, that their life would be filled to capacity with joy. Verse 14, I've given them thy word, and the world hath hated them because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that thou shouldest take them out of the world, but that thou shouldest keep them from the evil. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. As thou hast sent, I want you to underline the word sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them into the world. And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they also might be sanctified through the truth. Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which believe on me through their word. That's us. That's where we find ourselves in the intercessory prayer. Verse 21, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us. Verse 21, last phrase, that the world may believe that thou has sent me. Now, there's one thing I can tell you as sure as I'm standing here, that we are all messengers and evangelists. Every one of us. In fact, I could say it this way. We're all apt to be brand loyal. My wife prefers strongly Diet Coke to Diet Pepsi. To the point where it's Diet Coke or unsweet tea. It's not just diet. She's brand loyal. And sometimes if you get her in the right mood at the right time in the right place, she'll become a missionary, an evangelist, and she will tell you the difference between Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi. I pastor a church. It's uniquely positioned. It's on Interstate 10, Interstate 95, fairly close to, you could say it borders Georgia and Florida. And we are in the middle of the holy season, right? You know, in the South, there's four seasons, right? There's winter, spring, summer, and football. Right? Those are the four seasons. And in football season, you want the offering to be up? Let the University of Florida win. You want the offering to be down? Let the Gators have a rough weekend. Now, I'm not particularly, and I don't get into an evangelistic argument with me, I'm not particularly a Florida fan. Let me tell you who I am. I'm for anybody that makes the offerings go up. And so, if you go west 2.5 hours, there's Florida State University. If you go north about 5 hours, there's the University of Georgia. If you go south, west of us, about 75 miles, there's Gainesville and the University of Florida. And then we have these transplanted people. Should I even say it? They're not highly educated. They made their way from Alabama. And it's Roll Tide. Yeah. And so we have this, and you know what? You want an argument to break out? Just let people start talking about football. And you find out people are passionate. They're brand loyal, passionate. They're evangelists and they're missionaries for their football team, for their soft drink products, for their political candidates, for their point of view. And then you bring up the gospel of Jesus Christ and people who are passionate and articulate and vocal and verbal, and they can use social media and Twitter and Facebook, and they can get their message out on every single platform, and all of a sudden you start talking about the gospel of Jesus Christ and people clam up just like that. In fact, do you know that 80% of Christians do not witness for Christ in any way, shape, or form? Only 2% of church members are involved in the ministry of evangelism, where they're directly encountering lost people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. 71% of church members do not give towards financing the Great Commission. They're just not participating in it. And so while we believe, and I don't doubt this, let me say this to you. I'm not saying this to make you feel guilty, and I'm not saying this because I doubt the sincerity of your faith. In fact, I'm saying that we probably believe strongly in the gospel. We just don't do missions and evangelism very well, even though we believe strongly in the gospel. Now, I think there's some reasons for it. We don't do evangelism and missions well because the message of the gospel is too narrow. Now, I'm not saying I think it's too narrow. We just feel like it's too narrow. It's hard to say to people, and while we don't like to admit it, we sometimes are not confident in sharing our faith because we know the message of Christ is exclusive. Do you know that Jesus, listen, let me say this to you. The more rigid you are about the gospel of Jesus Christ, the more flexible you'll be about everything else. And the more flexible you are about the gospel of Jesus Christ, the more rigid you become about everything else. If you're flexible on the gospel, you have to be rigid about something. That's where moralistic Phariseeism comes from. Because you have to be narrow about something. The most narrow statements that Jesus made were gospel-centric statements. Jesus said, if you want to see the kingdom of God, you must be born again. That's an exclusive narrow statement. Jesus said, John 14, verse 6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Do you know how narrow and exclusive that is? Jesus didn't say there's many ways to God. He said there's one way. Jesus made this profound, exclusive, narrow, dogmatic statement. You cannot serve God and mammon. All gospel-centric statements to show how narrow and exclusive that is. And the more narrow and exclusive a message is, the more uncomfortable we are in sharing that. But can I remind you of something just to encourage you? The reality is that it's just as narrow, in fact, more so, to think that sharing the message of Christ is narrow than it is to make the claim. In other words, when somebody says to you, well, that's really narrow for you to share your faith, because that can't be true. What they're saying can't be true. And it's very narrow for them to draw that conclusion. And so the message of the gospel is too narrow. So we have to get over that fact. And there's a second reason why we're uncomfortable or we don't do missions well. Our faith is private. In the landmark book, Habits of the Heart, it is about Western individualism. In fact, the reality is that the vast majority of you that are probably 40 and older, somewhere deep down inside, you believe that faith is deeply personal and is probably best kept to yourself. Often, that's how others think about faith. If it works for you, fine, but you do not need to share that with me, or you do not need to share that with other people. And yet, when you think about those two struggle points, stress points for believers when it comes to mission and evangelism, they're completely opposite of what Jesus said. Jesus said, you don't put your candle under a bushel. He said, but you put it on a candlestick so it gives light to everybody that's in the house. You know what he's saying? You can't take your light and hide it because your private life is meant to be shared publicly. And so when Jesus comes to the end, to his end of his life, and he's getting ready to leave this world, he is going to give us a mandate. He actually is going to pray to God about us, that he is going to send us, that God would send us in the same way that God sent Jesus. Now that word sent is an interesting word. And what it really means is that we are to live a sent life. We're to live on mission for God. By the way, your theme, Mission Impossible. You can't get to the impossible part and conquer that until you get to the mission part, until you understand what the mission is. And so every single one of us are to live a sent life. Well, let's talk about that. We're going to unpack this passage for a moment and talk about that. Very quickly, let me just get us into it. Let's talk about the meaning of a sent life. Now, I want you to circle the word, and you find it here in verse 18. It's used twice. As thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them into the world. The Latin word behind the word sent that's translated in so many translations is the word missio. It's the word from which we get mission. So he's really saying to us, his mandate is really this: as thou hast missioned me, and we use the word commission, as you've commissioned me into the world, even so have I also commissioned them into the world. So you sent me, I sent them. Now, in order to understand our purpose or our mission, you need to see that Jesus prayed that we would be on mission, that we would be living a sent life. He used his being sent as a platform, as a basis for understanding what it means to be sent. I'm going to use an analogy. I'll use it, and it breaks down at a point, but it helps to understand it. Do you know what an ambassador is? And by the way, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20, we are now ambassadors for Christ. An ambassador is somebody that is sent from one, and think about a U.S. ambassador to a foreign embassy or foreign nation. It is somebody that takes the message of our president. He lives in a foreign land, and he, by the way that he lives, and he interacts with foreign dignitaries and foreign powers, he communicates with foreign governments the message of the president of the United States. We would say about a U.S. ambassador to another country that an ambassador is living in a foreign land representing the president. And so he's designated, watch this, he's designated and he's commissioned by our president to represent the ideals and values of our government to another country. And the ambassador is going to show to that country our values and our ideas with the hopes of influencing that country to a more friendly relationship with the United States. Now, here's where it breaks down. If you start thinking, well, okay, I can't be an ambassador unless I go to a foreign land. Let me remind you, every single one of you are living in a foreign land. Yes. This world is not our home. Amen. We're just passing through. We don't belong to this world. We're strangers and pilgrims. We're aliens. We're living in a world to which we no longer belong. And God has left us here to be a representative of his ideas and values and to communicate his message to the culture that we're living in. Tim Keller said it this way: missions is living for a cause that is so great, you'll sacrifice comfort and convenience. It is living for a cause that is more important than you, that will cause you to need or to ally yourself, to need to partner with a force or a power that is greater than you. Because you cannot represent God inadequately in this world that is hostile and alienated from him without the help of the Holy Spirit of God. It's important that you get hold of the concept and the use of the word sent. God sent Jesus into the world. Think about what that meant. Jesus gave up everything. Jesus left heaven. Jesus rearranged his priority. He had ultimate wealth. He had ultimate position. He had ultimate influence. He had ultimate glory. He had the weight of glory behind him. And Jesus was willing to sacrifice the comfort and convenience and prestige and influence and everything that he had. He laid it all on the table so that he could come into the world, represent God, and redeem us. When Jesus came, it was not just the death that he died, though the death was atoning, and without his death and without the shedding of blood, there is no remission or atoning of sin. It's also the life that Jesus lived. Mark 10 and verse 45, for the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, literally to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Now, let me show you what this really means. If you'll come down to verse 21, it actually shows specifically what our mission is. But by the way, can I tell you something? I know, because I know your pastor well, I know that your church has a mission. And I think formalizing and institutionalizing a mission statement is an important step for a church to take. But let me tell you something. Mission is not a noun. It's a verb. And we're to be living on mission. And here's what validates that mission. It has to be connected to the mission of God. He says in verse 21, at the very end, he said, that all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in thee, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. That is the mission For every single child of God, that is the mission for every Bible-believing church. That is the mission for every community of faith that tries to make a difference in the world. It's to let the world know that Jesus Christ has been sent by God and that the world must believe in him. In John 20, verse 21, the very end of this, before Jesus left this earth, he was with his disciples. By the way, you find the account of this also in Luke's gospel, Luke 24. And Jesus said to them, "Peace be unto you, as my Father has sent me, even so send I you." And then you know what he did? He breathed on them. Say, what was he doing? He was blowing the wind of the Spirit of God into their life to empower them to go into the world and make his mission known. Now, that's our mission. You remember in the movie Mission Impossible, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to make Jesus Christ known. Secondly, I want you to see this. I want you to see the joy of living a sent life. Now, when you come to verse 13, this is really a remarkable statement. He said, "Now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they might have my joy fulfilled in themselves." Now, there's a reason that we're attracted to superheroes. Now, I want you to go really young for a moment. I want you to go into your childhood. I want you to think about your favorite comic book hero. You know, for me, it was Superman, right? For some of you, it was Batman. For some of you, it's Captain Marvel. Or whoever, Spider-Man. When my youngest son was little, I used to tell him, I said, "You know, you don't know this about me, but as you get older, you'll come to realize I have superpowers." He said, "Dad, you're not a superhero, you're a sidekick." I didn't know what that was. I said, "What's a sidekick?" He goes, "A sidekick is a superhero with no superpowers." And you know what fascinates us about superheroes is they seem to live these remarkable lives because of the adventures that they're on. In fact, every young person here, and there's a good number of you tonight, every young person is born with a spirit of adventure. They yearn for the desire. They have a desire. They yearn for mission. In fact, what they really want to do is they want to change the world. They want to make a difference. And you hear that with the, you know, in you that are older, like I'm older, you know what happens to you as you get older. You begin to think, that really was just such youthful thinking. Well, what actually happens to us is that the world begins to convince you that there's something else besides changing it. And you sell out to it. And you begin to buy into the money and the materialism. And as you buy into the money and the materialism of this world, the status, the power, the wealth, the success, the recognition, the popularity, what slowly ebbs from your life is this adventurous spirit, this belief that you really can accomplish mission. And then what happens is that goes is you get so caught up in the material world that you lose your sense of joy. Let me tell you something. This thought, you find it. You find it in 1 John 1 and verse 4. You find it in Hebrews 12, verses 1 and 2. And you remember in Hebrews 12, it says, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." Now, I've heard preachers talk about that so many times in my life, and I cringe when they get that. They said, "Jesus, look forward to the cross." He didn't look forward to the cross. He endured the cross. He endured the pain and the suffering and the humiliation of the cross because there was something beyond the pain of the cross that gave him joy. You say, what was the joy? The mission of God to go into the world and redeem people that Jesus loved enough so that he could endure, he could suffer the shame of the cross. He was moved by it. And say, now think with me for a moment. This actually takes a little bit of reasoning this out. It takes a little bit of logicking to get this. If Jesus is the ultimate person, and he had everything that you could ever have, and he could have wanted for nothing more, why would he give up everything to go after us? Because there's a joy that only comes when you cease to be the most important thing in your life. There's only a joy that comes when you have something other than you to live for. Now, this conversation, I won't go too deep into it, but I had a conversation with a young guy the other day. He's going to make several hundred thousand dollars this year. And by the way, so here's the point. If you think a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of salary is going to make you happy, let me tell you something, it doesn't. Now, it may pay a lot of bills, and I'm not arguing that, but it's not destined to make you happy. This is what he said to me. He said, I'm making more money than I've ever made, and I'm more unhappy than I've ever been. Can I tell you what I told him? You know, when you get older, I'm at that point now where I just say things to people, and I just act like, you know, if you don't like it, I've got early onset dementia, and I just say things, whatever comes to my mind, I just say it. Okay? I said, you know why you're not happy? By the way, I don't care if he makes $2 million a year. Okay? I'd be happy if he did. It wouldn't bother me at all. I don't think there's anything, as long as you make money honestly and you don't take advantage of people, I don't care how much money you make. In fact, I'd kind of rather you make a lot of money. That's be my personal opinion. Okay? But here's why he's not happy. Because he's the most important thing in his life. There's nobody in his life that's more important than him. And some of you think, if I just had, if I just had that car, if I just had that house, or if I just had their life, or if I just had that money, or if I just had this, I'd be happy. Let me tell you something. The only way you're ever going to get happy is you got to live for something that's more important than you. And the reason that Jesus said, I want you to experience what it's like for your life to be so overflowing with joy that you practically cannot stand the joyfulness, the experience, the fullness of joy in your life. The only way you're going to experience that is stop living for you and live on mission for me. That's the joy of being sent. Thirdly, not only do you have the meaning of a sent life, the joy of a sent life, but you have the power of a sent life. Now, come to verse 18. He says, and as thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them into the world. So Jesus was sent by the Father, and he sends us. So there's something that tells us here, there's a chain reaction. You cannot live sent without being connected through Jesus to the Father. You see that? So God sent Jesus. Jesus sends us. But actually what Jesus is saying is, even as you have sent me, even so I also sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I might sanctify myself, that they also might be sanctified through truth. Here's what Jesus is saying. You cannot be deeply connected to mission without having your own personal encounter with God. When you meet God, it will change your life and it'll change everything about your life. I like what Chad said. I remember, I believe, August of 1996. There was a season in our church. I so much long for that same thing to happen again. I believe it will. I hope it will. We had a season where God worked through our teenagers. By the way, the freshest movements of God we've ever had in the 25 years that I've been, nearly 25 years I've been pastoring, have all come through young people. The greatest, freshest movements of God have all come through young people. When you meet God, not only change your life, it'll change everything about your life. Because what God is doing is he's always pulling you in so that he can push you out. Let me say that to you again. You will not go out until you first come in. And the degree to which you go out, the impact that you make when you go out is proportionate to what happens when you come in. Can I tell you something? I'm going to make a statement for you. I find nowhere in the Bible, and I'm not preaching again. I don't want you, when I leave here, if you don't like what I say, he's just a crazy uncle and just forget about it, okay? I find nowhere in the Bible that a church has to be highly programmed. I find nowhere in the Bible that it taught that you have to have a Sunday night or a Wednesday night service. I don't find anywhere in the Bible. I'm not against them. I'm for them. We're having one right now at our church. I'm not against them. But I do find this. You do have a demand for a corporate worship gathering. You say, why? Because you always need to be coming in. And the reason that you come in is so that you can go out. So you should come in. But you know what happens in the older a church gets? And I asked your pastor when we came in, you're 45 years old. We're 101 years old as a church. The more institutional you come, the older you become, the more internalized you become as a church. And it becomes about coming in and coming in and coming in and coming in and coming in. And we forget that we're drawn in to go out. Right? The mission of the church is not lived inside the four walls of the auditorium. It is so that we can be sent out. In fact, think about that. There's two Old Testament stories that illustrate this truth. When Isaiah encountered God in the temple, by the way, can I tell you something about that? It absolutely shocked him when God showed up in the temple. Shouldn't have. He'd been to the temple many times, and what happened to him the one time he went to the temple, that time that he went to the temple, was completely different than any other experience that he had in the temple. That's why you ought to go. You never know what God's going to do. In the year King Uzziah died, it exposed every insecurity that Isaiah had. Do you know part of his insecurity is he had had close. He was an aristocratic prophet. So he was buddies with all the people in power. You know, sometimes it's harder to speak truth to people that are close to you, people that know you best. And so he had some real insecurities. And he came in one day, and God cut him off at the knees, and he revealed all of his insecurities and caused Isaiah to confess his inadequacy. You remember the story, right? Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? And when Isaiah saw the beauty of God's holiness, it profoundly changed him and gave him a renewed sense of purpose. And God took the tongs from off the altar, touched his lips with a live coal, pronounced him clean, and told him to go out and speak with or for God. It is in his encounter with God, Isaiah got connected with a force more powerful than him and with a cause that was greater than he was. It's got to happen in your life. Or how about Abraham? You know, this is a true statement. Abraham grew up in a culture of people who worshiped the moon. That was his family heritage. And by the way, still, apart from the redeeming grace of God, Abraham's descendants would be moon worshipers. But somehow, the voice of God spoke into Abraham's life. We don't know exactly what that sounded like, but we know what the word said. He said, get up and get out of your country and away from your kindred, away from your family. So what happened to Abraham? He encountered a real God, a God with a voice, a God with a mission. And the more he drew closer to God, and the more that God continued to appear to him, the more he got to know God, the more he was transformed. In fact, He left a string of altars all across the Middle East in his attempt and his desire to know God. It's only when you get out of your comfort zone, it's only when you're secure, you get away from your own security, do you make yourself vulnerable. It's when you get out of your comfort zone and security that you put everything at risk. You put your reputation. You put your emotions. You put your popularity. You expose your finances. You put your children at risk. You put your relationships at risk. And you put your life at risk. And only when you do that do you experience a power. Well, let me tell you something. The church doesn't have to be weird in order to be on mission. It doesn't have to be weird. But it does have to be vulnerable. It does have to be exposed. It does have to be faithful. It does have to be expectant of God to come. We have a girl. I may have mentioned her to you before. Some of you may know her. We have a girl living in the very northern part of Togo. This is a girl. If you ever listen to her tell her story, it's just so fascinating. She's a single girl. I don't know. Anna's probably late 20s, early 30s now. She came to college. She's probably early 30s. She came to college, quiet as could be, just one of those good students, even better workers. And she graduated from college. Nobody had asked her. I don't think anybody had asked her, what are you going to do with your life, Anna? But we just knew she wanted to be a missionary. And we just assumed that she was going to do what every other girl that came to college to be a missionary was going to do. She was going to find a boy that wanted to be a missionary, and they're going to hook up, get married, and go to the mission field. That's what they do. All of them except for her. And so, boy, I'm just really struggling now. Time runs together. So Anna, she must have graduated. So she probably must have graduated 2003, 2004, somewhere in there. Maybe 2002, somewhere in there. So she's early 30s. And she didn't have any place to go and didn't have anybody to marry. So she went to Iraq. And I'm not talking about Iraq 20 years ago. I'm talking about Iraq in the middle of the Iraqi war, shortly after we started dropping bombs on Iraq. And she went to a little school in a town that was being overrun by Sunni Muslims. And she taught in that school. She taught in that school, and the stories are fascinating, until it became unsafe. It became unsafe for her life to be there. She went from there to Togo, and she spent about 6 to 8 months in Togo, came back to the United States, and then went back to Iraq for a year. Then she went back to Togo. When she was a little girl, and I mean a little girl, she told my wife and I this not too long ago. In fact, last year she told us the story. She was reading as many missionary books as she could, and she came across a book about the Yazidi people. And God just spoke into her life, just confirmed to her that she should take the gospel to the Yazidi people. And at that time, you talk about it's one of the least reached people groups in the world. Now, here's a girl in her early 30s. She's living in northern Togo in a Muslim-dominated, and I mean 90% plus Muslim-dominated Yazidi village. She actually lives in a compound with three women who were all married to the same man. They each have their own little house. He died, so there came a fourth house available. So she lives in this Muslim compound with these four women. She has her own little house. They get up every morning at 6 a.m. and they do their prayers. And she gets up at 6 a.m. and joins them, and she does her personal devotions. Get that picture. And then they don't know anything about what they're doing, so they want to know what she's doing. So she tells them what she's doing. And she's part of the family. And in that little village now, they've come across this nomadic people, these Yazidi peoples, and they've led two men to Christ. And they're working on two women. They actually had their first service last December on Christmas Day for these Yazidi people. And I mean, the last time I saw her, not in the United States, the last time I saw her in Togo, we were having a cup of coffee. Actually, she was drinking a Coke and I was drinking a bottle of water in a cafe. We just spent a few minutes together. I said, Anna, where are you going when we're done? And I was getting ready to go. I had one more place to visit, and I was going to get on a plane to go home. She said, I'm going back home. I said, well, where is that? She said, it's 8 hours north. I said, how are you going to get there? Now, she's probably 28, 29 at the time, single girl. She goes, well, Pastor, she said, I really wanted to see you, and my ride left. She said, so I'm going to get one of these guys that has a motorcycle to drive me 2 hours north, and there I'm going to get a taxi, and then I'm going to drive 2 hours north from there, and I'm going to meet up with our people, and then they're going to drive me the last 4 hours home. And I see this little, I'm thinking, dear God, if her parents knew that I was sitting in that cafe letting that girl get on the back of that motorcycle and go out into that country, they'd probably shoot me. And by the way, let me tell you something. You've never met a happier girl. You've never met anybody that has more sense of purpose about what they're doing in their life than that girl. She met God at an early age. And the more you come in, the more you'll want to go out. Last thing, I'll give it to you quickly. The requirements of a sent life. Now, can I tell you something? This thought is, I can't complete this sermon to you because I have not thought this all the way through. If when I do, I'll tell you the rest of it. But I think this is fundamentally, this is the issue in our kinds of churches. Our failure to understand this, as people, has limited our ability to influence the world. I want you to follow me. This is going to take you a little bit to get this. In starting verse 15, he said, I pray not that thou should take them out of the world. Okay? So here's point one. Jesus said, Father, don't take them out of the world. That means we have to be here. Okay? We have to be in the world. Okay? We have to be in the world. But then he says in verse 16, they're not of the world, even as I'm not of the world. So we have to be in the world, but while we're in the world, we can't be of the world. So what does that mean? That means that you can't be like the world. But you have to be of the world. I mean, you have to be, you can't be out of the world, you have to be in the world. And then he says in verse number 18, he says, as thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them into the world. Now, those prepositions out of, and into are very specific prepositions. There's two views, two extreme reductionist, simplistic views of the church's relationship to the world. In more liberal theological terms, the liberal church, and I'm using that term very broadly, looks at the world and says, there's a lot of pain in the world. And so we don't want to be at odds with the world, even though Jesus said the world's going to hate you. And so what they do is they say, we're going to let you be like us, and it doesn't really matter if you're like us, but we're just going to pretend we're okay with each other, and we're going to let the world into the church. And you have a lot of churches that are filled with people that are not godly. They don't believe in the supernatural. Okay? That's an extreme position. On the other end, the more conservative churches look at the world and say, gosh, there's a lot of pain out there in the world. There's a lot of evil. In fact, Jesus said, there's evil in the world. And so what we do is we don't want to lower the walls. We don't want to let the world in. So we put the walls up. And we go into isolation. And we become fortress people. And we say, well, they're out there. We need to keep them out. And our view of evangelism then defaults to maybe we can sneak out there and snatch one once in a while. Can I tell you something? What Jesus is praying, let me be honest with you. He's not praying either of those extreme positions at all. He's saying, don't be of the world and don't become like them, because you're supposed to be different and distinct from them. In fact, that's the heavy use of the word sanctification. It means to be set apart, okay? But he's also saying, I'm sending them into the world. So we're to be in the middle of this chaotic, evil, wicked, sinful world. It's broken. Until Jesus Christ comes, the world and the world systems that you live in and amongst are irretrievably broken. Politically, economically, socially, educationally, it's broken. Jesus didn't say withdraw from the world. He said, you go out into the brokenness and you live like my messengers. You live sanctified, set apart, just like I made you. Luke 24 and verse 19, when Jesus came to minister and to give his life a ransom for many, people knew that he was set apart. And they said, what things? And they said unto him concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who is a prophet, mighty in deed and word before all, before God and all the people. Say, what is God doing? He is sending us as sanctified followers of him into the world in deed, that is, with acts of mercy, with, I saw it when I came in. You're going to have an upward soccer. You know what you're saying? You're not saying you're better soccer people than the people out there. You're just saying, we want everybody that plays soccer to come here so that we can, by the way we act, by the way that we speak, by the way that we share, by the way that we do life, we can give you a different picture about life than the picture you currently have. And you should not have the greatest soccer program so that people can look at you and say, man, they have a great soccer program. You should have a soccer program so that people can come to know Jesus Christ and believe that God sent him into the world. That's deed. And by the way, you ought to have mighty in word too. You ought to be unashamed about sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. It takes a delicate balance. Jesus did not send the disciples out with methods. He sent them out full of the Holy Spirit of God to live holy, sanctified lives. You know, I just finished this study in, and not quite done with it, but I've been studying the Pentateuch. Do you know that the law is just a remarkable discussion, a description of what it means to live on mission for God? And everything in the law is for this purpose, is so that when people look at us, they would see how you're supposed to live if you live out the teachings of Jesus. And if you live out the teachings of Jesus, your life will be so radically different that people will see you as holy, as sanctified, as set apart, as sent people on a mission for God. Say, is it an impossible mission? No, because you're connected with the most potent force in the world, the Spirit of God and the Word of God. But you've got to take the challenge and you got to get out of your comfort zone. You got to make yourself vulnerable. You got to come in so that you can be sent out and make a difference in the world for Jesus Christ.
Thank you again for listening to this audio sermon. We pray that it has been a blessing to you. For more sermons or if you have any questions, log on to www.fbcbelong.com.